Welcome, everyone, to episode 136 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about the teams that got knocked out of the first round on the Eastern Conference side of the playoff bracket, namely the Miami Heat, Milwaukee Bucks, Washington Wizards, and Indiana Pacers. We will preview all of the big questions awaiting them this offseason. Before we get underway, I wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, but I'm more concerned about your dog. Is he okay?
He's okay. I think he just ate some mud off the ground, and he's doing a little thing where he's trying to pretend to choke and maybe throw up, but he'll be fine.
Okay,
He drank some water. If he can get stuff down through his air pipe, he's fine.
So we'll have a live dog death during the recording right. of this podcast. Yeah.
If my wife screams at me at some point, it's because our dog just threw up. So apologies in advance there.
I think that's a fair reasoning for being screamed at. I mean that's a legitimate cause.
I would agree. And speaking of dog vomit, Morten, let's start with the Miami Heat and namely Hassan Whiteside.
Who... nice. Love that one. That's
thank
good.
You. That's what they call a transition, folks. Hassan Whiteside. I mean, my God, if you have to give an award for like the worst first round performance from any player in the playoffs, I feel like Damian Lillard would get some votes just because the expectations were so high and he didn't live up to those. But at least he was on the floor, man. Like, Hassan Whiteside got played off of the goddamn floor against the Sixers. He played 15.4 minutes per game in the playoffs, and he is the highest paid player on the Miami Heat. He averaged 5 points, 6 rebounds, 1.2 blocks. Afterward, he basically continued his season-long tradition of griping about minutes and saying how, you know, he's like, just give me a chance, like play me 30 minutes. And if I suck, then at least I had a chance to get into a rhythm, but I didn't even have a chance. It's like, Hassan, Spo would have played you more if you didn't suck so badly, but you were giving them nothing on the other end of the court, so he took you off and played Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo, both of whom were better than you. So all of that begs the question, Mort, what do they do with Hassan Whiteside this summer? He's getting paid $25.4 million next year, has a $27.1 million player option in 2019-20. Feels like we're trending to a Carmelo Anthony-esque in OKC. Like, can you make him unhappy enough where he opts out of a contract that he has no chance of matching on the open market?
I'm going to actually bring up a trade idea.
Oh, okay. Please. I'm every Heat fan just got very excited that's listening to this podcast.
Oh, but they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be. Here's the thing. Obviously, he's signed for a longer term. Mm-hmm. So if they just get someone who's also overpaid... You know, they are not going to get something good.
Right.
So I'm thinking about a package centered around Jan Mahinmi.
Oh, okay.
Because he's on a shorter deal, and you know, Lord knows Miami loves to pay big salaries to role players.
Yeah, I think they are signed for the same amount of time, assuming again that Whiteside picks up his player option, which I assume he would. But yeah, Mahinmi's only making $15.9 million in 2018-19, and then
See, I'm just misremembering because Hassan signed in 2016.
Yeah. For some reason. Only signed for one more
year. Yeah. Okay. My mistake. I was actually misremembering. I thought he signed last year, 2017. But you know what? Those last two summers, they were just...
They're all the same.
So that's on me. Obviously, they signed for the same amount of years.
But
that means that my trade proposal here is dead either way, so because they should be focused on finding a short term deal or a deal that's on shorter term. That's just not gonna happen, I think.
I mean, they could. We'll talk about the Wizards later on in this episode, and John Wall made some very pointed comments about what they need, which led our friend Nikias Duncan to suggest that they should go after Hassan Whiteside. But they could, you know, flip a Marcin Gortat, who is only signed for one more year. Mm-hmm. Like that, if you're looking for a shorter term deal, that's at least something worth pursuing. But I think you're right. But more overall,
Washington can't absorb the rest of that deal, yeah, though. So should it be Jan Mahinmi and Marcin Gortat? So you take like a lesser amount back long term.
It's not a bad idea. I think if you're the Wiz, I mean, again, we'll talk about the Wizards and how how capped out they are. It's going to be a common theme, really, for three of the four teams that we talk about in this episode. Is they're really in bad salary cap space, or salary cap shape, I should say. So, like, the Heat right now have $116 million in guaranteed salary on their books for next year. The luxury tax is projected to be $123 million. So, like, this is what they have. Like, this is who they're going to ride with next year. So, like, yeah, if you're looking for ways to really shake up their roster, I mean, the Whiteside trade is probably the way you get there. But I think you're right. You're not getting, like, a top 10 pick for Hassan Whiteside. You're not getting a top 10 pick for a guy who couldn't stay on the floor in the first round. You know, for a guy who openly feuded with his coach for most of the season and really, you know, had a very public meltdown at the end of the regular season, where it was that Brooklyn Nets game where he's like, this is bullshit. Why are we matching up and going small? Like, because Hassan, you can't guard stretch fives. Like, that's Brett Brown immediately. It took him a half to recognize that. He switched Ersan Ilyasova into the starting lineup in the second half of game five, which led to that blowout second half and blowout victory. So, I mean, it's a problem. Like, I don't want to say that Hassan Whiteside is completely, like, hopeless, because I think there are roles that he can fill well. He is still a good rebounder. Yeah. He's a good shot blocker. He just needs to, like, play. He needs to know his role, basically. Like,
and he can score.
Yeah.
Like, but you got to give him that. I mean,
right. No, I mean, yeah. He averaged 14 points a game during the regular season in only 25 minutes. But he seems to want to, like, he made comments throughout that first round series about how the Sixers were, like, feeding Embiid so much. And it's like, yeah, because he can step out and hit threes and he can hit mid-range shots. Like, Hassan wants to be this guy who, like, his entire team is centered around. And I just don't think he's that type of a scorer. Whereas a guy like an Anthony Davis or Joel Embiid, or, you know, even a Kristaps Porzingis, like, yeah, those guys should be being fed the way they are.
Right.
But, I mean, Hassan Whiteside, you know, he just, no. Like,
right. You can run an offense through him, is what you're saying.
Right. Or, I mean, you can. It just isn't going to be a very good offense.
Right, but that's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah.
And I think that's the problem with this situation in particular, is Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo seem to be better fits for what Eric Spoelstra wants to run moving forward. So this headache isn't going away for Miami. Like, this was a particularly bad first round matchup for them because Embiid was such a mismatch, and then Ilyasova as well. Like, Philly had a bunch of stretch fives they could roll out. Not every team has that luxury, of course, but I mean, the Hassan Whiteside, if he doesn't embrace what he is versus what he isn't, and he continues to have this inflated sense of himself, like, this is still going to be a headache the Heat have to deal with moving forward.
Right.
So,
and there's really nothing to do about it. I mean, other than see if you can find a trade partner.
Right.
And what's going to complicate matters is Miami doesn't even have, like, their pick this year.
Yeah,
so they can't offer that as a sweetener, because that is going to Phoenix.
Yep, and then they owe their 2021 first-round pick to Phoenix as well, which also complicates matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could at least trade the 2019 pick after this year's draft, because if they... Right? Because they wouldn't... I don't think they owe another one until the 2021 pick. So I think Stepien rule, they would at least be able to do that.
Yeah, but the question is, should they?
Right, like, do you want? Is it worth trading a first round pick to get rid of Hassan Whiteside, or do you just hope he, you know, he's just so miserable after this year that he does decline that player option in 2019-20? So it's a really interesting
$27 million though.
I know, right? I'm getting very similar Carmelo Anthony vibes.
So, oh yeah, oh yeah,
yeah. I'd say that's the biggest decision they have this summer. Like, what happens with Hassan Whiteside? But that said, again, they have $116 million already guaranteed. So that leaves them, or $116.25, which leaves them $6.75 million without factoring in a Jordan Mickey, who they have a team option on, or Rodney Magruder, who they have, he's at $1.5 million non-guaranteed. So not including those two, you're at $6.75 million. Wayne Ellington is a free agent. Do you think are they going to have the financial wherewithal to retain him, or do you think he's probably just going to be a casualty unless they find...
Oh, casualty. Yeah. He's too good of a shooter not to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a minor miracle if he's back. I know he loves the team. I know he got his shot there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think someone else throws significant coin at him.
I would agree.
Honestly, he's going to be the primary reason why they probably going to decline a little bit next year. If he's not there, like, yeah, you extend the minutes to Josh Richardson, but you still need that spot-up shooter in Wayne Ellington. Who's that going to be? Deion Waiters? Give me a break.
I know. I was going to ask. Like, that was their one big absence in that first-round series. Deion Waiters got hurt much early in the year, missed most of the season. Do you think he would have made a huge difference?
No.
Fair enough.
I mean, look. That was easy. Here's the thing. The name Deion Waiters carries more weight than his game does.
I mean, he played well in 2016-2017 for them.
Yeah, he did. And like, then this year almost, he came in.
Yeah, I know. But he shot almost 40% from three on 4.7 attempts per game last year.
And when that went down, 9 percentage points.
Right. Therein lies, that he shot under 40 from three. Overall, and then 30.6 right. from three this year. So
the problem with him, though, is it's pretty simple as far as I'm concerned. He can't play the one.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so shoehorned into being like a pure shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. He's not really that good of a shooter.
Right. Outside of last year, which looks like the outlier.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he did shoot 37% in his sophomore season. So I think his career average of 34% is pretty fair.
Okay.
But that's still below league average.
Right. Yeah. That's not ideal for a two guard in particular.
Right. And he's one of those guys who has to take 18 shots to score 19 points.
Yeah. Right. The Heat do have, I mean, not only do they have Goran Dragic, but they have Tyler Johnson. Josh Richardson can play a little bit on the ball as well. Justice Winslow, you know, he showed me some things in that first round series. Like, I'm buying some property on Justice Winslow Island because I think it's still pretty vacated. But
you would have to share with Bill Simmons, and I'm not sure you want to do that.
that's fair. I probably don't want to do that. And
yeah,
he's going to be an interesting case too because he becomes eligible for an extension this summer.
More money, more role players.
Right. So do you think? I mean, the extension wouldn't kick in until 2019-2020, so that he wouldn't have to worry about, you know, paying like an exorbitant amount of luxury tax next year. But that said, in 2019-20, they have Hassan with $27.1 million player option, Goran Dragic with $19.2 million player option, Tyler Johnson with a $19.2 million player option. So they only
all opting in. They
only have $49.5 million in guaranteed salary on the books, but you add those three guys in, and that goes up really quickly. So do you think Justice, they just say, you know, wait it out, we'll let you test restricted free agency in 2019?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be the play, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you can get him to a very... You know, if you lowball him and you get him to agree to like $10 million a year,
I think that's worth. You do that, but I mean, what are the odds?
Right, short of that, you probably make him
What's fun though, $10 million a year prior to this season, that would have been a joke because he looked really bad.
Yeah, I know.
Really, really bad. Yeah. So, I would even go as far as saying $10 million isn't even lowballing him all that much because all we've really seen is a playoff series where he started to figure things out.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that that's lowballing him necessarily. I might start at eight.
Yeah. Yeah. I was most impressed with him as basically he played like their backup point guard role. And he played Markelle Fultz off the floor in that series. Like he was dominant in transition.
Yeah.
So if that's a thing moving forward, I don't know. It's like an interesting way to get the most out of him that I would not have expected coming into that series. But
you saw him at Duke though, right?
Yeah, but like I also saw his first 3 years in the NBA.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I was kind of hoping this would happen eventually. I was wondering why Miami didn't give him that role before.
Yeah.
I mean, at Duke, he was handling the ball a lot more. He was just featured a lot more in their offense. Then he comes to the Heat, and they kind of put him to the side. And then he gets injured. Like, it was just never... It was never a cohesive relationship he had with Miami until the playoffs this year, out of nowhere. And now which happens once in a while, we have to look at his game and go, oh, is he a lot better? We're basing it on a 5-game sample.
right. And like, to his credit, I mean, he missed most of last season with a shoulder injury and a wrist injury or something like that.
Yeah, he only played 18 games.
Yeah, but he shot... I mean, below 30% from three-point range in each of his first two seasons. He was at 38% this year. So it felt like they tried to shoehorn him, at least at first, into a 3-and-D role. And then, you know, ultimately they hoped he would follow the career arc of a Kawhi Leonard or a Jimmy Butler and, like, round out his game. And we haven't, you know, he's not anywhere near those guys just yet. But based on what I saw in the playoffs, like, I don't think it's unreasonable to think he could factor into this Heat team long term. Like, I think Zach Lowe of ESPN has been banging the Josh Richardson is Miami's best player drum, and I agree with that.
Oh, yeah, but he's not wrong.
Yeah, but, like, I think Justice Winslow is going to be coming up in that territory pretty quickly.
Am I wrong, or is Justice Winslow on the way to becoming the new Al Farouq Aminu? And that's not a bad I mean, people will listen to that and go, oh, are you're really low on Justice. No, I'm not. Al Farouq Aminu is a good player.
And
he really came into his own playing the four in Portland.
Right.
And Winslow played the four a fair amount here in Miami this year, where he kind of rediscovered himself. Like, I feel that's sort of a fair way to look at it and go, if he's going to top out as Al Farouq Aminu, I mean, that's fine. It's not franchise altering, but that's certainly not a bad player to have.
Right. I think a lot of the problem with Winslow, at least in terms of perception, is that you can blame Danny Ainge, basically. And you look back to the 2015 draft when he reportedly offered 6 draft picks, including 4 first rounders, to Charlotte at number 9. They were going after Winslow. Charlotte said no. The Heat took him at 10. We don't know whether Ainge made that same trade offer to the Heat that he did to Charlotte, but in the back of my mind, it's always like, oh, you know, Justice Winslow is the guy who Danny Ainge was trying to offer 4 first-round picks for, so he needs to live up to that type of... Like, we don't know what the protections were on those picks, whatever.
No, but it's still a heavy price.
Right. So I think that... is like, it's always just in the back of your mind. It's like, you know, he's not... You're right. If he turns into an Al Farouq Aminu, that's a quality role player over the past, what, like, you know...
3-4 seasons.
Yeah. So, which is fine, because I think... I want to say Aminu was around that same draft range. Like...
8.
So there you go. Yeah,
he was drafted
even higher. So...
Fine. I mean, the thing we saw with Aminu this year was playmaking at the four.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we've seen that with Draymond.
Yeah, we have.
As well. I mean, if Winslow can become just like a fraction of Draymond, that has to be considered a win. And Lord knows Miami needs more playmaking from other positions than the point guard position with Goran Dragic. Like, you kind of thought Tyler Johnson would become a more stable playmaker. Mm-hmm. I think that could still happen to a point, but I'm not as confident in that as I was before.
Yeah.
Forget about Dion Waiters ever becoming a playmaker.
Right.
He's a playmaker for himself, and that's it.
Yeah.
So now if you have that, you know, release valve in Justice Winslow, you can pass it to, who mm-hmm. can create something on his own, create opportunity by himself, but for others, I should say. That's suddenly a new layer to Miami's offense that might become very necessary because they are so limited.
Well, and I mean, James Johnson averaged almost 4 assists per game too. But if you
that's correct.
Yeah. But if you can run the same offense with either Johnson or Winslow at the floor, or at the four, I should say, like when Johnson is off the floor, and if you put Winslow at the four,
like a carbon copy, yeah,
right, yeah. If you can just run the same sets, that's a big win for Miami. Like it is. That's not good if you have to like run two different offenses when James Johnson is either on or off the floor. So
especially if he brings the defense too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. No, you're right. That's a good point. That's a really good point. That he should model himself after James and potentially Amino. Like improve the shooting range, improve the volume of it, get some more ball handling down and focus on defense. That I mean, that could, he could turn into something.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's ultimately, this is what the problem that we said going into that series with Philly is they lack the type of top end talent that you often need in the playoffs. They had a bunch of like B to B plus role players. I mean, I know Goran Dragic was an all-star this year, but Simmons put that to rest during the first round. I think I'm pretty sure he's still a little salty about that one. And then Whiteside, you know, your highest paid player just plays like total garbage, but you know, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Johnson, all of those guys are good. Josh Richardson, Dwayne Wade had his one Dwayne Wade game. Like, all of those guys are good, but you don't have, like, that one true star. Winslow, I guess, is probably your highest upside player on the roster. So,
yeah.
And Adebayo, too, actually. I mean, he showed some real flashes this year. He looks like, I think, what, he was number 14 overall last year? I mean, he's looking like a... If not a steal, at least a very good value in that range. So,
well, I like Adebayo, but I need to see some range.
Yeah,
I mean, because he is going, look, he's going the Whiteside route. If he's just active around the rim, he would have to become an absolute defensive beast.
Yeah,
or a Clint Capela copy. To actually break that pattern. Because he's not a strong scorer. He's not a strong shooter yet. I love what he's doing. And I love the fact that you can plug him into the mid-range area and he'll even make passes that Hassan Whiteside could never do. But I feel I need to see a little bit more before I buy property on Adebayo Island.
That's fair. Ultimately, I guess my question with Miami is, given their salary cap structure, assuming they don't find a taker for Whiteside this summer, are they basically locked into, like, is what we saw this year their ceiling? Like, 40 to 45 wins.
Yeah.
First round knockout.
Yeah. Even with Dion back. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so, too. Which, it sucks, but this is what we were afraid of,
you know, last summer. Oh, we said this. We talked about this last summer. I remember because they signed, I think it was James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and Dion Waiters on the same day.
Yeah, and it was like James Johnson was some. I think he was 4 years, $60 million.
Yeah,
I want to say Dion was four
years. I have it here. Hang on, I have it right here.
Yeah,
yeah. James Johnson was 60. Dion Waiters was 52, and Kelly Olynyk was $50 million.
Yeah.
So that's 102. That's $162 million spent on one day,
right?
On 4 year contracts, and we were just blown away by the fact that they got such long term deals.
Right. Yeah.
That's still not a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. It's going to be interesting to see where this Heat team goes this summer. I'm excited to track some Hassan Whiteside trade rumors. Let's now flip more to the Milwaukee Bucks, who put up a hell of a fight against the Celtics, but ultimately fell short. I mean, I feel like the Bucks don't have as many questions as the Heat. There are really two gigantic ones. First, they need a head coach. I think Joe Prunty definitively proved he is not that person. So who should they be going after?
Mike Budenholzer.
Yep. Okay, so we agree there.
Yep.
Why do you think Bud's the right guy for that team, though?
And by the way, I would just like to say this wasn't rehearsed. No, I didn't know who you had.
No, it was most certainly Mike Budenholzer.
Well, I just he comes from the Pop coaching tree. I think he did well in Atlanta, even though he was given a pretty crap roster to work with for the last year.
Yeah.
He loves to share the ball.
His early time with that team, like they, you know, that first year he got there, they were 38-44. The next year they were 60-22. That was the like entire Atlanta Hawks starting five all-star year.
Oh yeah, no, I'm more or less talking about, you know, how people perceive him because in the NBA it's a what have you done for me lately crowd.
Right.
And people would look at, hey, look, if he was that good, how could he not lead Dennis Schroeder and John Collins to a better and Dwayne Dedmon to a better record? But like, no, that team was crap, and that's not his fault.
Right. You him lost going Al Horford and Paul Millsap for nothing. That's really...
And Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Teague was in Indiana, right, for a year?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, yeah, okay. But, right, okay. Yeah, he just makes sense.
Yeah.
He has the right makeup, he has the right profile. He's a guy who communicates in a way that is pretty down-to-earth. And he's not like a tipsy and screamer.
Right, right.
And he used to play ball in Denmark, so yeah.
Yeah.
Budenholzer. There you go. Obviously, yeah. Right.
Obviously, yeah. He knows the game.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think based on his time, you're right. Like, this last year was not great in Atlanta, but it's also not his fault. I think he proved himself during his first four seasons with the Hawks. I think they were pretty well coached. Like, I don't think when they lost in any series, you went and, like, immediately blamed the coaching. Whereas this Bucks series, this Bucks-Celtics series, I 100% blame the coaching. Like, with a better coach on their sideline, they could have won that series. And I remember you and I on Twitter were joking, like, because Bud officially got, mutually agreed upon his exit from the Hawks after Celtics Bucks game 5, and we were saying, like, can the Bucks hire him before game 6? Like, is it too late? Which, well, and I still kind of wonder that.
Yeah, no, I look, that was fun, and that's a true point. I just want to say real quick that Joe Prunty, I mean, I feel bad he was thrown into this mix. I mean, he's taking a lot of heat on social media.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's fair when you're thrown into that position. I mean, it's fair. It's not been good. Yeah. But this does not mean that Prunty's a bad coach. We don't have enough data on him yet.
Right.
We just know that right now he was just a little bit overwhelmed. And you know what? You're allowed to. It's the NBA and a head coaching position. You're allowed to be overwhelmed. That's what it is.
Okay. That's a fair point. Yeah. This is not... We're not saying Prunty should never coach in the NBA again. Just this was not the right situation for him.
Exactly. And yeah, Budenholzer just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So much sense there with Giannis. Oh, my God. Giannis under Bud?
Oh, my God. I know.
Or rather, Chris Middleton. I was about to say on the right side. I'm drunk. Chris Middleton under Bud.
Yeah, I know. Like they. Ooh. That's the thing. Milwaukee talent wise should be feeling pretty good about itself because you've got Giannis signed through 2020-21. Middleton and Bledsoe are each signed through next year. Middleton has a $13 million player option in 2019 that he, if he doesn't decline that option, oh my God.
No, Lord have mercy. He will.
You also have John Henson through 2019-2020. You've got Thon Maker through 2019-2020 as well. Like, you've got most of your core guys, except for one in particular who we'll talk about. Oh, Malcolm Brogdon's also signed through next year. So you got most of your core guys at least through next year, if not a little bit further, in particularly in Giannis's case. So, yeah, like, in terms of roster construction, I mean, they don't. They're not going to have cap space to really add anyone of consequence. They're going to have, depending on what happens or what they do with Jabari Parker, they'll either have the probably the non-taxpayer mid-level exception if they re-sign Jabari, possibly the taxpayer mid-level exception. Mm. So they won't have a lot of cap space to round out their bench. But like talent-wise, with the right coach, they could be. I mean, I think most of us coming to the year had them pegged as a top four team in the East. They aren't that far away. That leads us to, though, Jabari Parker is a restricted free agent this summer. How do you think, first of all, before we even talk about how much they should be willing to spend, do you think they should be trying to retain him at all?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm really not sure. I think he improved upon his playoff series. Like, we actually talked about him a couple weeks ago, and we were both really down on him because he had played horrifically.
Yeah, those first two games, he was brutal.
Yeah, and he came back and did well. Mm-hmm. Like, he was way more active, way more engaged, and he looked to be a little bit more locked in defensively.
Yep.
So there's some upside there. The injury concerns are major concerns. ACL tears in the same knee. And you also have to wonder, is there room for him if Middleton and Giannis are going to take most of the wingman positions, minutes? Yep. Because Parker can't really play center, and I don't... No. I know we talk about Giannis at the five, but I don't know. I'm not ready to go to that point yet.
Yeah,
so maybe you do the whole Nene thing again.
Sign him to trade him later.
Right.
Yeah. Or the Blake Griffin, as it will now forever be known.
It will now be known as the Blake Griffin. Right. Yeah. I think that's a thing, because if you then re-sign him, you might be able to get him on a reasonable deal.
Yeah.
And if you do that, and you give him a shit ton of minutes next season, and he does well, then at the deadline, you can actually look at the possibilities coming in, like, oh, hey, Jabari is playing well. Let's hype up his trade value, and maybe you get something good for him. And then you take a good package, you wipe the sweat off your forehead, you go, whew, he didn't break down, and we got something in returns that we can use to build around Giannis and Chris Middleton.
Yeah, I agree with that approach. He's still a number two overall pick, so you don't want to lose him for nothing. I wouldn't, if I'm Milwaukee, I am most certainly not offering him a max deal myself. I'm saying go out into the market and, you know, we're open to matching offer sheets, but, you know, I would probably lowball him if I'm Milwaukee, to be honest, and see what the market dictates for him. Because I mean, the teams, I guess Chicago is a potential threat just because the Bulls have a lot of cap space this summer.
Oh, but... and Lord knows they love their torn ACLs.
Right. And isn't he a Chicago native?
He is a Chicago native. So it's all the criterias are just, oh, no, wait a second. He's not 34. Wait. Yeah.
Right. But they need someone from Chicago on their roster at all times. So they can
who has from a
Chicago.
Knee, who yeah, has right. knee injuries, right. obviously.
Oh, yeah, because D-Wade too. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that's a possibility, but like we've talked about it before, we're gonna say 100 times between now and July, there just aren't that many teams with a lot of salary cap space. And maybe he's at the point where he doesn't really care, and he's just like, all right, just, you know, he's in the cash that checks mode, and he just wants to take the biggest deal he can find. But like, if he wants to go to a team that's gonna be in the playoffs,
what about the James Johnson contract as a blueprint?
Like a 4-year, $60 million?
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable for both sides. I would assume that Parker's people would push back on that, and maybe you do something more like what Embiid and the Sixers did, where you only partially guaranteed X amount, like 50%, and then if he has more injury issues down the line, you can get out of it. Like, specifically knee issues. But, yeah, I mean, I think a year ago, Parker was talking about himself as a max player, and he was coming off of a season, or, like, this was before his second injury, and he's coming off of a 50-game sample size where he averaged 20 points on 49% shooting. Mm. Like,
he did well.
He looked like Melo but efficient. So I mean, he's rightfully going to be bummed, I think, by the offers he gets this summer. But as you said, two ACL tears in the same knee, like, there is,
yeah, very, you got to safeguard yourself.
right. So there's, yeah, I mean, it's going to be fascinating. I think he's one of the most interesting free agents, you know, outside of LeBron and Paul George, like outside of the big name guys. He's really one of the more interesting free agents this summer. Like, this whole restricted free agent class, really. Like, Aaron Gordon, Julius Randle as well. Like,
Zach LaVine.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No, they're so tough. They are so tough at figuring out. Like, I know that they're going to get big paychecks, mm-hmm. but I think half of them are going to end up overpaid. Like, Marcus Smart, Jabari Parker, and Zach LaVine are the three guys that I expect to completely be overpaid by perverse degrees.
Totally agree. Anything else we need to hit on with Milwaukee, Mort? Should we move on?
Well, I just wanted to say that ultimately Milwaukee's long-term goal mm-hmm. should be to somehow hang on to Chris Middleton, like maybe offer him an extension that's just too good to pass up, mm-hmm. and Giannis, of course, and Thon Maker. If those three guys are retained, mm-hmm. you could make something work. I think those are the three key people on the roster that you just hang on to, and then you're open to moving everybody else. That would be a retooling process and not a rebuilding process.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Maybe Malcolm Brogdon. I'm not sure yet. He's kind of old for a
rookie
guy.
Rookie of the year, Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah. How dare you?
Well, look, he's actually, he's good. I mean, he is. That's not, yeah.
I know.
But no, I agree with you. He should never, but he's already 25.
Yeah.
He's old. And I mean, you're getting him in the prime years when he re-ups, but like that's a one contract player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think part of the problem for Middleton is I don't think they can offer him enough money and an extension to convince him to re-sign. Like, they can re-sign him when he becomes a free agent next year, but I don't think they're going to be able to do like what the Sixers did with Covington this year and, you know,
and make it
get
work.
Him locked in before.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I think he's going to become a free agent in 2019. And then, yeah, maybe he really likes his time there and he likes playing with Giannis and that's cool, but maybe he wants to join the Sixers and actually compete for championships. So
yeah, but you guys are probably going to have Paul George by then. So
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the Wizards then. And we got to start with the annual John Wall throwing his teammates under the bus because, he says the Wizards need athletic bigs, quote unquote. He was talking about, you know, what they need to add this offseason. And he said, quote, they just got to add some pieces, a lot, to be honest. There's a lot that we could use. I think it's pretty obvious. I don't think we need to point it out. I think the way the league is going, you need athletic bigs, you need scoring off the bench, you need all of those types of things. We don't really have an athletic big, and he was referring to Mahinmi and Gortat. I mean, both of those guys are older, they're not athletic, but they do the little things that permit their game to help as much as possible. That's not great. And this is now the second straight season where he has... Like, last year, he kind of put Otto Porter on blast right before, you know, he was, like, actively recruiting Paul George in a trade. And he was like, yeah, you know, we're set at point guard and shooting guard and power forward and center. And, like, all due respect to Otto, he did well, but we need a third star. Which is basically just like, okay, well, Otto's about to be a free agent, so how's that going to go? And now, you know, you look at the Wizards... Much like the Heat, they are just in salary cap hell forever. Like, they have $115.9 million in guaranteed salary on the books. Jason Smith and Jody Meeks, if both of those guys opt into their player options, that's already, you're already in the luxury tax. So, what do you see the Wizards doing to improve their roster, Mort?
Well, first and foremost, you actually had an athletic big on the roster. You just didn't play him. Chris McCullough. I believe in this kid still. he's 23 now, so I think I was kind of surprised that he didn't get a chance. He's got great size. He's 6'11". He's really slender and agile and quick. He can block shots. He can actually shoot threes. Like, he has the makings of a small-scale unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel as though Washington explored him enough.
Mm.
And I think that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Having said that, what John Wall refers to are established stars, established bigs. Right. And, I mean, you can't. You can't go out and get one of those, you know, signing them off in free agency because you don't have the money. Like, right. You would have to acquire them through trades, and I'm not sure how the hell you do that. Like, then we would have to go back to the whole, you know, Whiteside to Washington idea.
Yeah.
Off of, you know, an idea with Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahimi, but like, then the playoffs roll around, then what? Like,
right.
Whiteside is going to be the same guy.
Right. Right, exactly.
Here's the thing. They have the 15th pick in the draft. Yeah. They need to swing for the fences here. They need to go out and find the most athletic guy that they can get, who's also one of the youngest guys, and then hope that they can mold him.
Yeah.
Don't go safe in this draft, Washington. Swing for the fences. That is your one chance of getting out of this medium ranging thing you're in where you're just mediocrity all the time.
Right.
Like, you're a fine playoff team, you know, a first round playoff team, potentially a second round playoff team, but that's it. Like, the ceiling is there. We see the ceiling.
Yeah.
And you need to find a way to lift that ceiling, and that is going out and getting someone who, down the line, but not next year, could become like a starting caliber center or power forward who can change the face of the franchise.
So,
the fate of the franchise.
Are there any guys in that range that you think are capable of doing that?
Yes. One, and again, did not plan this because you sent me a link to CBS Sports. Mm-hmm. With John Wall's comments. And that article actually goes on to mention Mitchell Robinson. That was one of the guys I was thinking about.
Oh, there you go.
So that's pretty fitting. He is a little bit older than I thought, because he didn't play college ball. I thought he's already 20. I thought he was, you know, 19, an early 19. So he's 20 already. But you'll live with that because the skill set is quite fantastic, and he's athletic, and he would fit the bill pretty well. He's got a long wingspan. Like, there's a lot to like. So you take that and you see what you can get. But he is still a project. He's not going to be ready next year. He's not going to be ready the year after. Mm-hmm. So John Wall is going to crab on somebody for 2 years and he's just going to take it.
Right, right. Another guy who I thought might be like Robert Williams from A&M, because he was mentioned.
Robert Williams, yeah.
He was mentioned as like a top five pick last year if he had come out. And then
that's right.
The same thing happened where, you know, if a prospect comes back and doesn't show immediate improvement, he starts slipping down draft boards a little bit. But yeah, I like
Jontay Porter.
Yeah, I mean, all of those guys. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think that's the Wizards, for once, should not sell their draft picks like they always do.
They should
actually pick a player, because, like, yeah, that is your one way to answer John Wall's request to get athletic bigs. But outside of that, like, you know, he also wanted bench scoring and players who can create off the dribble. And it's like, John, they need to sit him down for CBA school and teach him, like, when you're making X amount of money, Bradley Beal and Otto Porter are making X, and the Mahimi deal is a killer for them. And I don't, you know, maybe he's tradable if you can find, you know, go back to your Whiteside idea. Like, if you can find a guy who's equally out of favor somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, it's just tough to see how this roster improves all that much outside of, you know, if they're willing to pay the tax, you can throw out the taxpayer mid-level exception. You can get some guys on minimum deals. But, you know, like, Mike Scott played well for them. They got him on a minimum deal. But is he willing to come back and do that again? I don't know. So, yeah.
I'm just going to ask you a question here, which is going to change the entire tone of the conversation.
Okay.
Let's assume the Magic gets a top three pick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually offer that to Washington and you tell them you damn well know that you're not going to want to pay John Wall that money?
Right.
And we need a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to restart our entire franchise here. We're going to retain Aaron Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to retain Evan Fournier. You know, he's under contract, but I mean, we're not going to trade him.
Right.
We're going to bring John in. He's going to be the face of the franchise. He's going to have the athletic big. He's going to have some shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And then we roll our dice. Like, if you're Washington, do you do that?
I think part of the problem, I'm pretty sure, is Wall won't be eligible to be traded until, I think it's the 1 year anniversary of his...
Oh, the poison pill?
Well, just the 1 year anniversary of his contract extension agreement, which was July 26th.
Oh, well, that does complicate matters.
Yeah.
You could have a deal in place.
Right. So you could agree to that and then just delay it for a month, which...
Which would be hell of awkward, but that's fine.
Right. But
no, but okay, then just let's assume that that's the thing. Do you do it?
Hypothetically? Like, yeah. I mean... It depends.
Look, for the listener out there, just so the listener can follow along, like John Wall is going to earn $47 million when he's 32 years old.
Yeah.
$47 million at the age of 32.
Yep. I know. It's an enormous contract. Yeah, it's like 4 years, close to $170 million.
Extension, right.
Right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, next year he's still at 19.2, and then the big one kicks in 2019-20. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a ridiculous thing to at least consider, I would say. Now, whether they would actually go ahead and make that deal would depend on what else, you know, if it's just like, if you said, like, Orlando gets a top three pick, if it's just like, number three straight up, or like just whatever to make salaries match, you know, like take back Bismack Biyombo and just get all of these clunky bigs from the summer of 2016. You're probably not doing that, just because I think if Washington's doing that deal, they're going after Luka Doncic, right?
Well, I mean, he's going number one probably, so that's probably not going to fly. I think what they go for is just getting out of John's contract and getting a very solid player in return.
Whether it's Ayton or Jaren Jackson or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that just has to be the focus. And I'm looking at Orlando's payroll right now. I mean, yeah, you would probably have to throw in Terrence Ross.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine.
Yeah, because that's only a one-year commitment.
Yeah.
So the thing is, what I want to see in the end game from Washington is the cap relief, ultimately.
Yeah. Because, right. And we've said this, I mean, really since the Otto Porter signing, but now especially since Wall's extension, when you're building around a big three like that, you know, in 2019-2020, Otto's getting paid $27 million. Beal's getting paid $27 million. Wall is getting paid $37.8 million. The cap is projected at $108 million for next season, which is subject to change. But, you know, Otto and Beal alone are 54. While
Jan Mahin meets 15.5.
Right. Like, those four guys alone, just those four guys are basically at the salary cap already.
Right.
So, like,
so now let's remove John Wall from the equation. Then you have $54 million combined for Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. You would have a guy on a rookie deal at that point, the guy you get from in a Wall trade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's suddenly a different foundation.
Yeah, I know. I think it is completely reasonable to say they should explore trades for Wall in particular. And this is not saying John Wall, the Wizards are better without John Wall, which was the narrative right after he got hurt. I don't think that's correct. No. But that said, you're right. Like, the Wizards are better without paying John Wall $37.8 million in 2019-2020 if it means they literally can't get any players outside of, like, their first-round picks, which are not going to be high enough to really change the course of this franchise, or salary cap exceptions, which are not going to be high enough to get impact free agents. So,
right.
Yeah, it depends on what they would get in exchange for him. But, like, there's clearly some, I mean, at least from the outside, it looks like there's some chemistry issues, and it looks like a lot of them revolve around Wall. So it really might be an addition by subtraction thing, depending on what you can get for him. But that's ultimately the question. Like, what could you get for him?
Well, and theoretically, even if, like, Orlando stays at five,
mm-hmm.
and it's in the Trae Young area.
Yeah.
And Trae Young tests out well at the combine and private workouts and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, he's nowhere near the defender that John Wall is. But potentially coming in and being this, like, he should be an offensive contributor right off the bat, Trae Young. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't doubt that for at all, and a playmaker as well.
Mm-hmm.
If he comes in, like, Bradley Beal is going to be top dog.
Mm-hmm.
Otto Porter is going to be the second guy. And then Trae Young would be a guy who comes in and takes Wall's minutes and be the third guy, but on like $20 million less a year. I mean, even if he duplicates Wall's offensive production, or I should say, if he duplicates John Wall's offensive production, that just mm-hmm. gives Washington so many more layers to build around that team.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's tough because obviously you take a hit. John Wall is fantastic.
Right.
He's a top five player in the East, not point mm-hmm. guard player.
Mm-hmm.
But that contract is not, like, you mentioned this a couple months back, and you've mentioned it repeatedly since, like, only a handful should really get, like, that super duper max.
Yep.
And, I mean, I still think John Wall, on the surface of it, is one of those guys. But when you look at the age that he'll be in,
mm-hmm.
when he kicks in, and when you look at the fact that he's still not the knockdown shooter that you hoped that he'd become, and then when you factor in the fact that he keeps on having issues with his teammates,
And his knee injuries,
you just kind of, collectively, it just adds up to the point where you go, well,
yeah,
maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, if they stayed at five, I don't think five and Terrence Ross gets it done for Wall. But if you throw a Jonathan Isaac in there, now I think we'd be talking, if you're both sides.
Mm-hmm. I would... See, this is why it's a problem that the Magic did not pick up the fourth-year option on Mario Hezonja.
Yeah, because he could have been
an interesting guy. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so dumb. But I wouldn't hate adding in Jonathan Isaac. I know he was injured. I know he only played 27 games, but...
No, yeah, he's going to be good. I'm saying, like, he's a valuable piece for Washington. Right. Like, Washington would value him. And he's the kind of young, athletic big that John Wall is talking about, ironically enough.
Yeah, as well. But then you have Aaron Gordon, so you can sort of... Right. So let's just look at that. Like, let's assume that they shelf off the fifth pick, Jonathan Isaac and Terrence Ross for salary purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Then Orlando's core would be Fournier, John Wall, Nikola Vucevic, and Aaron Gordon, assuming you re-sign him, which you have to in this scenario.
Right.
I mean, Vucevic immediately is a better version than Gortat.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Fournier is not as good as Bradley Beal by any stretch of the imagination, but he plays in a similar way.
Yeah.
Like, he's got some of the same strengths. Yep. Then you have Aaron Gordon, who is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, John Wall would like to play with those guys, I think. That makes sense. Yeah.
Except Marcin Gortat has said he wants to go back and retire in Orlando. So is that going to come back in 2019? They're going to have the same problems all over again.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. But that, we can worry about that down the line. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think, whereas I reacted negatively to your idea of a Russell Westbrook trade for Kemba Walker and Nick Batum, I think a John Wall trade, just the idea of it is reasonable. And I think something, like, there might be something there with Orlando. I don't think that's totally unrealistic, because you're looking at two top, I guess Isaac was number six, right?
Yeah.
You're still looking at two top six picks, most likely, plus Terrence Ross, who's also a lottery pick, and he's, you know, he he would be.
Yeah, good. Come on, we can't say that he was born a lottery pick. He's 27. Yeah. This is the Bulls' way of doing it. Like for some 38-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, he was drafted fifth overall in 1972. He's like we just think we got another draft pick.
Right, but like in Orlando, I mean, he didn't do very well in Orlando this past year. But like in Toronto, he was a valuable role player. I think he could be a very good six man for the Wizards.
And honestly, the Magic would be so much better. Like, could you imagine Nick Vucevic next to John Wall? Those open looks. I kind of dig that.
Yeah. All right. Last question for the Wizards before we move on. Mm. Kelly Oubre, like Justice Winslow, eligible for an extension this summer. Do you think they explore that conversation, or like the Heat, should they just punt that to next year and let him test restricted free agency?
No, I mean, explore it. Like, talk. See what comes up. I mean...
Yeah. What do you think would be reasonable for him?
I mean, it's so difficult when you only had one good year, you know? Mm-hmm. But he did have a good year. I mean... Yeah. He didn't have a fantastic year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Nine, I think it's fair for the Wiz to start out. Just, like, start the conversation... at somewhere around 9 to 11 million a year, and then it could go up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll probably ask for 15 right off the bat.
Right.
And then they find common ground at like 12 and a half, 13.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the problem for a lot of these wings is, you know, whereas 2 years ago, all of the contracts signed inflated their values, and then players could point and be like, hey, you know, Timofey Mozgov got $64 million. I'm joking. No, I deserve more than that. Or, hey, Evan Turner got $70 million. I deserve more than that.
Right.
Now you look at a guy like Robert Covington, who, you know, he renegotiated, so it's a little bit different. But I think he's owed something like 40, somewhere in like the 42 to 45 million range over the next 4 years, starting with next season. So that's... you know...
Which is really cheap, by the way.
Right. Like, that's 10 to 11 million a year. And... Robert Covington's a very good player. Like, that's probably the market value for these guys, even though, you know, like
Kelly Oubre is not close to Covington yet.
Though. Right. Yeah. And like, Oubre could get there, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I think you're right. Like, a 9 to 11 million is a reasonable place for the Wizards to start, just using the Covington renegotiation as a baseline, and I think Oubre's people will tell them to go shove it up their ass and see you in restricted free agency next year.
And that's fine, but honestly, he would have to have a breakout year. I mean, we've talked about Oubre, and I think I even said, oh, he's having a breakout year. Yeah, he had a breakout year compared to his standards.
Right, relatively.
He's not, he's not turning into like an all-star, or he didn't turn into an all-star, but if he takes that second leap next year and becomes like a 16-17 point player, that changes the conversation, obviously. And then I think Washington would be fine paying for a guy who could do that. Like, they would feel more certain and more secure in paying for a guy who's at that threshold instead of a guy who just wrapped up a year where he averaged 12 and 4.5.
Right. I mean ironically, if you look at his career progression next to Otto Porter's, it's very similar. So, like, if he continues developing along that trajectory, I mean, Otto was a much more efficient scorer than Oubre was, but, like, in terms of just pure raw points per game, rebounds per game, whatever, you know, Otto took a big step forward in year three, and then took a bigger step forward in year four, became, like, you know, one of the league's leading three-point shooters in terms of efficiency. So if Oubre follows along that trajectory...
That's huge.
But like, the Wizards let Otto test restrict free agency, and you could argue it came back to bite them because the Nets gave him a max offer sheet, which they then had to match. But I mean, I think you're right. I think, especially again, given where they are in salary cap standing, unless they trade John Wall, like the fact that they're capped out basically with four players on their roster in 2019-2020. They're going to have to reevaluate everything. So I think they're going to keep their books clean, let Oubre become an RFA in 2019, and then revisit it there.
Should also be noted that Oubre had a PER this year of 11.9. So we shouldn't be quick to overrate him either. You know, yeah, I mean, right. And one final note on Washington as well. I want to see Otto Porter next year become the full-time four.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand why they keep mugging him around at the three.
Right. Well, I mean, because they have Markieff Morris.
I don't care.
It's reasonable, but...
I mean, he's long-armed, he's athletic, he's 6'8", he's built to be a new-age four.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if they don't stick him there permanently, like, if they stand pat with this roster, I would assume Markieff Morris is going to continue playing, starting at the four. And Otto, to his credit, I mean... This is just based on Basketball Reference's position estimate, which is by no means an exact science, but he played 34% of his minutes this year
right
at the four, which was the highest of his career. He did 30 as a rookie, and then it went down. He was almost exclusively a small forward, and then it started trending back up. But yeah, now he basically spent a third of his time at the four, the other two-thirds at the three. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think that's... Especially if you're trying to get Wall, Beal, Oubre, and Otto on the floor all at the same time. That's what you got to do.
Mm.
All right, Mort, let's wrap things up then with the Indiana Pacers, who, you know, of all the teams that we've discussed today, the Indiana Pacers have to feel probably the best about themselves. I mean, maybe the Bucks do just because they have Giannis, and that's, you know, it's a pretty good trump card. But, I mean, the Pacers... You know, after the Paul George trade, no one, including us, I think, had them as a playoff team this year. I stupidly said, like, you know, I was wondering what they were doing with, like, the Darren Collison signing and the Bojan Bogdanovic signing, because they were signed to reasonable deals, but I was like, well, you're just locking yourself into, like, the 10th best team in the East. You're, like, too good to tank, but you're not good enough to make the playoffs. That proves I'm an idiot, because they were the number five seed. They took LeBron James. I mean, they took him within 4 points of elimination in the first round, which he had never played in a game seven in the first round before. Victor Oladipo breaks out as an all-star. I mean, the clear front runner for most improved player. It looks like, you know, they did pretty damn well in that Paul George trade in retrospect. Baby Sabonis, too, played really well. So... They're in an interesting spot, actually, because they only have $39.9 million in guaranteed salary on the books. They have a couple guys with player options, and then they have three guys with not fully guaranteed contracts. Bogdanovic only has $1.5 million guaranteed. Darren Collison only has $2 million guaranteed. And then Al Jefferson has $4 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Bogdanovic they need to decide on. By June 29th, I think it's probably safe to assume they're going to pick him up.
Oh, yeah.
Darren Collison, they have to decide on July 1st. You think they're going to fully, or like, you know, whatever, guarantee the rest of his salary as well?
Well, I mean, we had a discussion about this before we started recording. I'm not sure. He had some legal issues. He's 30. I mean, it's still a good deal, and he's a fine player. I mean, we saw that in Game 7 as well. Like, it's not a knock on him.
Mm-hmm.
I would just wonder if you actually declined, or if you waived him and you actually earned some more cap space, and you also said goodbye to Al Jefferson.
Right.
Like, if that would free up enough cap space to make, like, a pseudo all-star player interested in coming along and joining Vic. I could see that sort of happening. I mean, yeah. I do think Oladipo is a guy who could attract attention around the league.
I'd agree. Yeah, so Jefferson has $4 million guaranteed. They can waive him up until January of next year. So he's the one who they have the most flexibility with, and I feel like he's the one who would be, you know, maybe they just decide to roll this core back and keep Jefferson around as, like, the veteran leader to impart more wisdom upon Sabonis and Miles Turner. But you're right. I mean, if they have a guy who's interested, something tells me Paul George will not be one of them, or LeBron James. But, like, a DeMarcus Cousins, maybe, you know, that could be somewhat interesting if the Pelicans, fueled by their success in this year's playoffs, really lowball him and he decides to explore elsewhere. So,
and then imagine if, like, Thad Young actually opts out. Like, right. We don't know. I don't think he will. I think he has a player option of $13.7 million. I think he opts into that.
Yep.
But if he doesn't, and you hear DeMarcus Cousins is, like, asking around.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
And then Corey Joseph, too. He's at $7.9 million player option.
Yeah.
His decision could influence what they do with Collison. Like, if he opts in, maybe they see him as being capable of taking over as the full-time point guard, and they save $8 million by letting Collison walk. Mm-hmm.
Have Joe Young.
That's true. Or conversely, if he opts out, I feel like that probably increases the chances of Collison sticking around. My guess would be, with the exception of Al Jefferson, who I think might be on the chopping block, depending on if they need to free up some cap space, I would assume otherwise they're just going to run the same core back, because why not, right? Like, they were vastly exceeded expectations. They were a 48-win team. We don't know where LeBron's going to end up, but if LeBron leaves the Cavs, like, I'd say it's between them and Milwaukee and Washington for the fourth best team in the East next year. Mm. So, like,
that's fair.
Yeah, there might be no harm in just, like, running this back, letting this core continue to develop together, seeing what you have in some of these guys. I mean, you know, you threw this system together basically on the fly starting in July, and they vastly exceeded expectations. Like, you know, your books, if you're Indiana, your books are, I mean, almost completely clean after next season. So if you want to retool then, you know, Oladipo is signed for $21 million each of the next three seasons.
Oh, he's such a steal.
And, wild to say.
I was just about to say, like, last year we called him a bad contract.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How quickly things change.
But to be fair, I think he would have been a bad contract in Oklahoma City next to Russ. Well, like, he never would have reached this level next to Russ, because Russ is just such a high usage player. And you could make the same argument even dating back to the James Harden era. Like, James Harden would never become the MVP next to Russell Westbrook.
Right.
He needed to, get on his own team and flourish. So, like, yeah, that Oladipo contract looked very bad at the time, but you're totally right. Like, now, I mean, getting him on a less than max deal.
Yeah. No. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, and it is fantastic. I am eating every word that I said. Yeah. And I love doing that, because that's just so great for him in the game.
Right.
23 points a game, leading the league in steals, five boards, 4.5 assists, 2 threes a night. Jeez. I mean, this guy is if this is not, let's just hope this isn't an outlier. I don't think it is either, but I mean, I would be very curious to see what he does next year. Like, he takes another leap and becomes one of those 26 points a game scorers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of those who are at the top of the league continuously.
Yeah.
I mean, that is going to attract so much attention in free agency in the coming years when, as you say, they have clean books.
Well, I mean, what's really it's good for the Pacers, scary for the rest of the league, is coming into the season, we figured if they were going to surpass expectations, it was going to be because Miles Turner took another step forward, and he really did not. So he is also eligible for an extension this summer. What do you think the Pacers do with him?
Yeah, so remember earlier, a couple of months back, we actually talked about Miles Turner, mm-hmm. and I floated the idea that maybe the Pacers should trade high while, you know, the perceived value of him around the league was high.
Mm-hmm.
I have not gone away from that. Mm-hmm. Quite the oppositely. I'm very much in favor of Indiana trying to, before they enter into all the extension talk,
mm-hmm.
see what shopping they can get. Around. Yeah, look, I mean, he actually took a step down this year, and a pretty significant step, and he didn't always show up in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
When I see him play, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, like, you expect him to do more.
Yeah,
like, definitely. And even when you look at the stats, like, even from last year when he took a step up, like, he was at 14.5 points, 7.3 rebounds, and 2.1 blocks, and that was, like, fine. But you knew that he could shoot, and you were like,
mm-hmm.
he should be doing more. And then this year it was down to 13 points a game, 6 boards. His minutes was cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't think the productivity level is high enough to justify, you know, spending a lot of your long-term money on him. He's basically the same per 36 statistical player that he's been since his rookie year. Roughly 16 points, 8 boards, and 2.5 blocks a game.
Oh, wow. That's freaky. Yeah, it really is almost identical in all three
almost
years.
Identical. Yeah. Even the assist numbers, the steal numbers, it's roughly the same.
Yeah. The one big thing that went up are his three-point attempts. And he, to his credit, he hit 35.7% of them this year. And I think that's the thing that makes, like, basketball nerds in love with him, is that he has the skill set of the unicorn. Like, he could be mentioned in the conversation with an Embiid and an Anthony Davis and a Porzingis, etc. But because he's in Indiana, he flies under the radar. And because he's not putting up 25 and 12, he's flying under the radar more so than those other guys.
Right.
But, like, he does have that three-point shooting range on offense and then still, like, really good shot blocker on defense. Like, he has that unicorn skill set, so it's easy to fall in love with him. And you could see, if the Pacers do enter an extension with him, you could see why. But, like, I agree more. It's tough to say with much conviction that the Pacers should, like, without hesitation, max him out this summer.
That's kind of my thing. Like, if you max out Karl-Anthony Towns, and you max out Miles Turner,
right,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I mean, one guy is obviously deserving; the other one would be paying off potential.
Yeah, exactly.
And I probably would not want to risk more than like $80 million over 4 years.
And that seems reasonable to me. I mean, especially if, depending on how the, you know, if the salary structure goes down compared to, like, the top free agents aside from that. But, like, a guy like Nerlens Noel turned down 4 years, $70 million last summer. Nerlens Noel is not getting 4 years, $70 million this summer. And Miles Turner is a better offensive player than Nerlens Noel was. But I'm going to guess a comparable offer would not be available. Like, had Nerlens become a free agent this summer and had the, you know, let's forget about this season, but, like, just because there are so fewer teams with cap space, you're not going to have as many teams able to offer these big deals, again, outside of, like, these really crappy teams. So,
right,
you know, like, maybe the Bulls make a play for him, and or I guess that would be next year.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, at that point, it's getting hard to project out as to which teams are going to have cap space, just because we don't know how this summer is going to play out. But, you know, maybe a team like the Lakers or the Magic or the Bulls or whatever make a play for him. And that's a risk you're willing to take if you're Indiana, because you can always match whatever offer sheet he gets. But I'm with you. I definitely don't think you offer him a max extension this summer. It would not surprise me if they say, you know, if they offer him something in that 470 or 480 range, and if he turns it down, okay, like, prove us wrong.
Yeah.
And if you do, we're going to match it. That's great. Like, we will happily match it at that point. But you're right. Like, taking, yeah, I mean, he's said this was the hardest season of his career. So if, you know, if he can bounce back from that, awesome. I think that's your best hope if you're Indiana. And that's, you know, it could really help that team take another huge step forward. Because if he does, you know, he did have games against Cleveland where he did come through and play really well. And it just shows you, like, shit, if he's rolling, Oladipo's rolling, Bogdanovich is hitting threes, Collison's hitting threes, Thad Young's just doing his all-around thing, this team's really good.
Mm-hmm. I will say this. If his sophomore season, Miles Turner's, if that's the baseline moving forward, I'm good.
Yeah.
What I fear is that the, you know, the basement or the floor moves down even further.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what I fear.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
All right, Mort, I think that's a good place to wrap things up. So thank you to everyone for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. We will have plenty more by Felicia's in the weeks to come. We just got to wait for teams to get knocked out in the second round. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. I'm Brian Zaporik, and as always, I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
Thank you, Brian. I'm looking forward to talking about Utah as a Bye Felicia team, because based on tonight's game against Houston, it looks like that's going to happen real soon.
Yep, Utah and Pelicans, we're going to start preparing for the Bye Felicia segment now. All right, later, Mort.
Later.